gumblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, and reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. And email me, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Quick shout out to everybody who reached out after that last episode with Steve Fezzik. Folks seemed to really enjoy it. Gave out some decent picks in that pod too. Steve's favorite bet of the week was Tampa over the Bills. Had to sweat that one out a little, but it hit. Also, we nailed another long shot or lock. It was a Denver-Baltimore tease. Also got a little schvitzy during the Baltimore leg of that. But hey, if it hits, it hits. Another great guest today. Got to say, we are bringing it with these guys. It is a gambling great, Rufus Peabody. He's a pro bettor, co-host of the Bet the Process pod, and awesome, awesome podcast. And also one of the guys behind unabated.com. Here he is, Rufus Peabody. Rufus, I know you've been interviewed many, many times before. However, I'm willing to bet that you have not gotten this many times in interviews before. And that is, I was at your high school last week.
Really? And it's got a different name now.
That's correct. So you went to T.C. Williams, right, at the time?
I went to T.C. Williams, yeah. And now It's Alexandria City High School.
That is exactly right. So here's the backstory, just to catch everybody up. T.C. Williams, it was a high school in Alexandria, Virginia, just outside of D.C. It is now called, as Rufus said, Alexandria City High School. My main gig, I'm a TV news reporter, and I was there because it's kind of a crazy story. I don't know if you heard about it, but the basketball coach for Alexandria City High was getting heckled from actually some of the team's own fans. The game was elsewhere, but it was the Alexandria City High coach. And he went into the stands, and by all accounts, somebody else hit him, actually, as he was walking back to the bench, and pandemonium ensued. And there was video, and the coach ended up resigning. So I was there covering the story, and we had already set up this interview, and I said, I got to mention this to Rufus. I'm pretty sure this is where he went to high school. And sure enough, here we are now.
You know, what's funny is my senior year of high school, I actually did, I was the statistician for the basketball team. I also ran track, but my, the high school basketball coach, Chavez Mabry, was also a really accomplished tennis player who gave me tennis lessons and stuff. And I was on the tennis team. So that's how I kind of got connected with the basketball team for that. But, you know, I've been to I've been to a lot of games at the Garden, and, you know, I traveled Hayfield, it's so funny now, all the divisions have changed and everything, the districts, but it's a trip down memory lane.
It's a wild one, right? All right, let's keep this going. You have this amazing backstory, and I want to kind of work through it together. And please stop me if I get anything wrong here. Originally from Mississippi, you grow up outside of D.C., Northern Virginia. You do a little sports writing for the Alexandria Gazette as a kid. Had to mention it. I love that. Yeah. You go to Yale, read a Gene Wojciechowski article about Las Vegas sports consultants, a legendary odds-making company founded by Roxy Roxborough. You get an internship there. You get a full-time job there. Now, I want to pause for a second. What did you do at LVSC, and what was that experience like for you? Because this was kind of your first time really being out on your own and living in Vegas, right?
So the internship or the full-time job?
Either. Take it where you want to go.
Well, so what I did I wasn't an odds maker for them. I did a bunch of sort of statistical analyses and things that they needed. I remember I did something for like integrity monitoring, tracking line movements, and sort of analyzing those. I, you know, built some things for Kenny White for his, he was the head honcho there for his sort of process. For example, like quantifying, he wanted to know for his power ratings how much to make like a rebound worth relative to, I don't know, a block shot or something. And so I was able to set something up and to sort of give him some answers for that. And then eventually I moved into actually setting numbers for props myself, because I was doing that and betting props as well. So, I mean, so a lot of this stuff, like I was also able to work a lot on my own stuff. so it was, I was always working, but sort of building, building models. I did a lot of derivative stuff, money line charts, you know, first half based on total game, basically stuff where they needed some, you know, something a little more statistical and quantitative.
Okay, but, so I'm sorry, Rufus. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, no. It's funny. I actually just I just found on my computer last week an old log of for my first, I guess, like 5 months or 4 months out in Las Vegas of like I tracked all my bets and all my gambling. And it's really interesting to look back at it. You know, I tracked like playing, you know, video poker and blackjack and like what my hourly rate was and like detailed notes and every, you know, all these bets I placed. And it's fascinating to look back now.
How'd you do?
I think for those 4 months I was up, you know, I was up $8,000 betting overall, 6,000 on sports and 2,000 on other things. And I think my hourly rate for like the, you know, poker, blackjack, sort of just advantage play in casinos was something like $18 an hour. So not like, I mean, I was betting with a really small bankroll at the time. I was like playing blackjack, you know, spreading from $5 to $30 and counting cards. And so, you know, you're not going to build a bankroll that fast that way, but it was fun.
All right. So you end up leaving LVSC after a little while, because basically you're making way more money at that point betting. You joined up with a group of guys and you were doing very well. And I think what it started because you kept seeing a guy named Mark DeRosa betting props, right?
Yeah. I just ran into him. I noticed him at the Palms asking about NBA props, and I'd been in line behind him betting Super Bowl props at the Golden Nugget. And I was like, who is this guy? And kind of just, he almost maced me, but you know, I avoided that and we became friends, and those guys got a sense of, he and his team got a sense of what I was doing and brought me on sort of on a trial basis for a free roll betting baseball. And so, yeah, I went from there. I mean, they were much more well capitalized than I was. And, you know, they had a lot of options for places to bet and manpower. And so it was a really, without that, I don't know where I'd be.
Going back to the mace for a second, I listened to this really awesome podcast called Risk of Ruin, and they did two episodes on you guys, your betting group. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the reason that Mark almost maced you is because these were the days where the money wasn't just moving on phones. You're talking cash, and he was walking out of a casino. You followed him, and what, he thought that you might be trying to rob him, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, you can't be too careful with those types of things. Cause I mean, I've walked around, I mean, I've had backpacks full of like $200,000 plus in cash walking around betting. I mean, cause in Vegas, you need to bet. I mean, you bet with cash. You can't bet on a card or anything like that. You're depositing, you're walking around with cash and betting tickets. And so you really have to be aware of your surroundings.
That's gotta be so nerve-wracking walking around with that kind of money.
What's funny now is that, you know, someone who doesn't know me might, like, I said something like to a friend, I was like, yeah, I have like $8,000 on me or something like that. And I was like, and they're like, 8,000? Whoa. I was like, well, no, if I got robbed now, it wouldn't be a big deal because relative to like what it would, you know, relative to, you know, some of these times in the past, like I remember I once locked my keys in the trunk of my car and my backpack was in there with like six figures worth of cash because I was going around betting NFL regular season win totals. This is maybe back in like 2015, the summer of 2015. And I was with a friend and he was like, wait, you're just going to leave that there? You're going to go, like, cause I was like going to go somewhere else while I waited for the like AAA to come, you know, but it's funny. You get desensitized to it. I don't want to say rather quickly as I don't, I mean, it's been 13 years for me doing this. So, you do get desensitized to it. It becomes, it's not real money in how you think about it. It's, you know,
a kind of a tool of the trade if you're betting professionally and you're good at it, which by all accounts you were.
You have to, right. You have to bet money to make money. And it's not like, you know, if I bet 200,000, I'm not expecting to, it's not like I'm going to make 200,000 or anything like that. You know, if I hold a few percent, you know, I'll make a few thousand.
So I'm jumping around a little bit here, but ultimately you start Massey Peabody Analytics, Massey being Cade Massey, who had actually been your senior thesis advisor at Yale. And I think he's at Wharton now. Yeah.
You've done your homework.
I'm a reporter, man. I did research. What was that thesis on again? I love this.
It was on psychological inefficiencies in the baseball betting market. So awesome. It was basically how it was, a lot of it was like DIPS theory, the defense independent pitching statistics. And at the time that wasn't fully, I guess, integrated into the sort of baseball betting lines. And so you could basically, the market's overvalued the outcomes and undervalued the sort of process underlying it. So like pitchers that had, I mean, everybody knows this now, I think, or I'm sure all your listeners do, you know, strikeouts, walks, and home runs are sort of the most fundamental things for pitchers, mostly strikeouts and walks. And so that wasn't really in, you know, integrated the market at the time.
Fast forward some more. Dan Steinberg of the Washington Post ends up writing a feature about you. This was during the 2011 Super Bowl. You're 25. You're really starting to become a well-known guy. And I think this is interesting because even though it wasn't that long ago, at the time, most sports bettors did not necessarily want to become well-known guys, right? It's not like it is now. Is that fair?
That's very fair. And my partners had a ton, like they were not very happy about this at all. And at the time, I was not a well-known guy at all. This is like, I didn't have a Twitter or anything like that. Like, I mean, I was known in a very small circle, the people in Vegas that were bettors basically. But I mean, and not even by name, I was just the guy that was like doing props and stuff. You know, I was part of a team.
Right. So right. Was
really, and then the Massey Peabody thing, I guess, started that year. But yeah, that was sort of it was fun, like having Dan out here for a week, following me and my girlfriend around, who was running bets for our group at the time.
Quick Steinberg side story. I've read him for years. I mean, I'm from the DC area as well, and I was out. I was doing some story. It was such like a local TV news story. It was like the pools were opening back up for the first time after the pandemic. And it was kind of a big deal. So I was just like looking for some parents to talk to. And he was out with his kids at a playground. I was like, hey, do you want to do an interview? I didn't recognize him. And he was like, no, I'm not going to do it. But my wife will talk to me. I interviewed the wife and she was great. And it was a wonderful family. And we talked for a few. And then it wasn't until the next day he tweeted at me and he was like, hey, thanks for interviewing my wife. I was so embarrassed. I've read him forever. I would have talked his ear off, but I didn't even make the connection that it was him in the moment.
You didn't recognize him, huh?
I
haven't seen him in like 10 years. So I don't know if I'd read, you know, I don't know what he looks like now relative to before, but.
Totally missed it. But I mean, he was a really nice guy. His kids were great. His wife was great. Anyway, you talked about your Massey Peabody stuff. I mean, you guys are really big on rankings, right? Team rankings. That's a big part of what you do. And you're published in the Wall Street Journal for years. And now, still relatively young, mind you, we're the same age, I think. You're kind of this gambling luminary with a great podcast, Bet the Process with Jeff Ma. I really enjoy listening to it. And an awesome website that we're going to talk about later called unabated.com. How'd I do, Rufus, with the history? Did I nail it?
You did. You're one of the seven listeners.
Yeah, I'm one of the seven. I enjoy it very much. Sometimes I tell you what, man, Jeff, who I do not know, he's tough on you. He's tough on you. You got some thick skin there. He does not mess around.
Yeah, Jeff is like one of the, if not like one of the smartest people I know. He's incredibly, I mean, both business-wise, just the way he thinks about things. I mean, and Jeff's a close friend, and I think, you know, it's there's some give and take there. I think he's got a little bit of the older brother vibe on the podcast for sure.
I can see that. I can see that. Hey, one more before we get to the games, and this is a broad one. When you place a bet now, when you come up with what you're going to bet, how do you do it? What's your basic process or strategy?
So it depends on the sport, but it's all process driven. So I mean, what's the strategy? I mean, I have models that I, you know, build from the ground up that I trust, and I find a discrepancy with the odds offered. I find the best price, and you know, I get down. I, you know, either myself or through betting partners, or you know, their various channels.
We hear, you know, almost everybody who comes on here has models these days. Is there anything that you do differently that maybe sets you apart from some of the other people building models?
Well, I mean, I don't know what their models all look like. I can only speak to mine, but I think what makes a model good, I mean, I think uniqueness is important and looking at things kind of in a different way than other people, asking questions that maybe other people wouldn't think to ask of the data. I mean, I think it's two things, right? Like you want to either have better information or the ability to process that information better. And ideally, if you have both, that's fantastic. And it's gotten harder. I mean, sport like the NFL, there's a lot of really good publicly available information out there now that wasn't, you know, there that wasn't, that wasn't the case like, you know, 12 years ago. And so the market is smarter. Before, like, you could sort of, I guess you could get a lot of this information yourself, but it was time consuming and difficult. But fewer people, because of that difficulty, not a lot of people had it. And so there was an advantage to that. But as all this like really great data has become ubiquitous, it gets harder. So the information part certainly is not as easy to win with that. I mean, I'm not a quote information guy, like bettors that, you know that this guy's out due to COVID. I mean, there's been news this morning, I think, like Frank Clark's out for Kansas City due to COVID, and the market, you know, you could see how the market reacted. I was kind of watching it on the Don Best screen in real time. And, you know, I'm not one of those people. I'm definitely a numbers guy. But, you know, I'm rambling as
I told you, man. Rambling and gambling. Ramble away. I want to hear what you think. No worries.
Well, you know, Jeff would just like cut me off before I just got myself into too much trouble.
I don't want you to get in trouble, but I do want to hear you ramble. Anyway, no,
so, I mean, I think it's, I don't know. I mean, I think there is certainly an art to it. I think a lot of people say, oh, you know, just throw things into a machine learning algorithm and, you know, but how does these machine learning algorithms, they're useful for certain things, but for very more specific things. You can't just say, oh, here's all this data, like build me a good model. There's logic involved. There's the processes that take a lot of steps and you have to iterate. I mean, think about this, like figuring out the predictive value of each like marginal yard gained on a pass play. I think about like a wide receiver screen where the cornerback falls down and the wide receiver goes 80 yards for a touchdown. Like, is that fundamentally worth 80 yards predictively? Probably not. Like, there was one little slip up that happened and suddenly it's 80 yards, you know? So, you know, would you rather have a team that had 8 plays for 10 yards each or one play of 80 yards? The 8 plays of 10 yards. So things like that, like, but being able to sort of figure out the predictive value of each additional yard based on these circumstances for future games, things like that, like, I think it's just about, it's contextualized data. Asking the right questions or different questions and contextualizing data and understanding randomness.
That was a good answer to a tough question there that I asked everybody. So nice work. And on that note, let's do some week 15 lines. I'm going to give you a game, some odds, and then just take it absolutely anywhere you want to go. We don't have to spend a ton of time on each game. There's no pressure to make a pick or anything like that. Just give me whatever you want to give me. I gave you 5 games ahead of time. We'll see how many of them we work our way through. And all these lines that I'm giving out are from FanDuel as of Tuesday afternoon. And by the way, for the listeners, I have a ton of questions that I'm really excited about, kind of random gambling big picture questions for Rufus that we're going to hit towards the end of the pod. Anyway, here we go. Let's start with that Thursday nighter that you mentioned. It's a good one. KC laying 3 in LA against the Chargers. The over-under is 52. Chargers, 8-5, one game back of the Chiefs in the division. They've now won 2 straight against the Giants and the Bengals. Chiefs, 9-4. They've now won 6 straight. They've given up 17 or fewer points in each of those games. And things seem to be really looking up. According to the very good Next Gen Stats Twitter feed, the Chiefs pass rush generated a season high 34.7% team pressure rate versus the Raiders, and their 17 total pressures are tied for the most by Kansas City in a game this season, which I thought was noteworthy because it's very different than what we saw earlier in the season. I will say, you mentioned Frank Clark, 7 of those pressures in the last game came from Frank Clark. Now, with all that being said, Rufus, any thoughts on this one?
That line opened at 4. It's moved down. My number without just from the Massey Peabody team ratings, I make it Kansas City -2. What's interesting to note is these teams are actually fairly similar. If you look at their metrics, you know, on offense, they're above average in every category. On defense, they both are a little worse than average against the run. Kansas City's really struggled against the pass just in the year overall. They've been a little bit better recently, but and Chargers have been good there. What's really interesting, though, is that Kansas City is, I have them as the 94th percentile team in scoring efficiency on defense, whereas the Chargers are in the seventh percentile. And scoring efficiency is essentially just opponents' yards divided by, or points per yard. So what this means is Kansas City is basically good when it counts. They're good at getting off the field. They're good at holding teams to field goals instead of touchdowns, generating turnovers. It's generally, there is predictive value in it, but it's more random than a lot of the other metrics. So, I mean, I would say that Kansas City is kind of, in a way, that their defense has been kind of punching above their weight class in that regard. Like, you're not normally going to, if you're 94th percentile there at fifth percentile in pass defense and 40th percentile in rush defense and 33rd percentile in play success, like, one thing doesn't fit, right? And so,
yeah.
And the scoring efficiency is going to be much more correlated with generally with, like, you know, how many points they're actually giving up. So I lean Chargers there. Obviously the injuries or the COVID stuff, you know, I guess we only have two more days. So, but it, you know, that's going to continue to evolve. But obviously that helps the Chargers as well. So I don't personally have a play on the game yet, but I would definitely lean to the Chargers side.
One additional note, the final score of that Chiefs Raiders game last week, it was 48-9. That is a scoregami. It has never happened before. And it was the 1,071st unique final score in NFL history. That's from the @NFL_scoregami Twitter feed, which is kind of fun. Yeah. I'm going to unofficially call this next one, Rufus, the Misery Loves Company game. You are a fellow Washington football fan, correct?
Fortunately.
Yep. I hear you, man. All right. We've got the WFTs at Philly, now -5. The Eagles are over under 44. Football team 6-7, had won 4 straight, but lost to the Cowboys last week. Philly, also 6-7. They beat the Jets last week, 1 week after losing to the Giants. Also, just let me throw this one out there real quick. Currently, FanDuel has Washington at +230 to make the playoffs. They would get in as the 7th seed if the season ended today. They've got the Eagles at +198 to make it in. So odds makers actually give the Eagles slightly better chance than Washington. Rufus, what do you think of this game?
Well, I think they should give the Eagles a better chance than Washington right now. I actually ran simulations on Unabated this morning using some market lines, and I'm going to actually pull it up. But this game, so I think Philadelphia is actually sneaky good on offense, especially running the ball. But that's honestly surprised me. I haven't watched a lot of their games. My number on this game is very close to the market. I make it Philly -4.4. I don't have a play.
Okay.
And not, I don't have a lot to say on it. I mean, I'll tell you, last week, you know, my numbers liked Washington. Once that line steamed up to, I think it closed Dallas -6.5, but, you know, I played it for small, cause I had the feeling as a Washington fan, it was going to be one of these games where they lost like 28-3 or something. You just kind of, I don't know, that sixth sense of, you know, decades of misery.
couldn't you just kind of feel it too? And it was like the Cowboys coming into town. It was just such a Washington football game.
Yeah. Whenever expectations are highest for Washington, that's, you know, when they go in the tank, that's just, I mean, we've seen that time and time again.
I thought this was kind of cool. It's also kind of random, but that, that pretty crazy Heinicke to Sims 43-yard touchdown from last week, one of the few bright spots. According to Next Gen Stats, which I love, I have a lot of fun with them, that pass had just a 10.2% completion probability, and they said it was the fourth most improbable completion by Washington over the last 5 seasons. But yeah, pretty good.
You would think that, I mean, if it had a 10, I mean, that seems statistically sort of very infeasible. I mean, given the fact that, like, I mean, 10 percentile things happen all the time, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
10% of the time.
One, yeah, right.
So I mean, shouldn't there be something like this? Shouldn't there, you think there'd be more?
Do you think it speaks to just the lack of, you know, improbable passes being completed by the Washington football team?
I don't know. I don't even know how they define this. Is it like improbable, like from at which point in time was it measured? Is it when the ball was released? Like, is it based on, you know, is it the catch by the receiver that's improbable? Is it, you know, I don't know. They always say catch probability. Is it just based on where the throw is in the defender, or is it like, I don't know.
I just thought it sounded cool, Rufus. You're raining on my parade here, man.
It does sound cool. By the way, it was a nice catch. So running some simulations just based on some market numbers, I have Washington football team is +378 to make the playoffs, and Philadelphia is +139. I'll have to run it with Massey Peabody while we're doing this in the background, so I can give you what my numbers, what Massey Peabody's numbers are for it.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like you're leaning towards do not touch it.
Yeah. I'm not touching this game.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, but I mean, also Washington make the playoffs.
Oh yeah, not betting that either. I took Washington. I had Washington futures at like 10-1 to win the division from a week or two ago that are now dead in the water. But it is what it is.
I hear you, man. I hear you. Next one up, New England at Indy. Colts laying 2.5, over under 45.5. Pats 9-4, winners of 7 straight. Currently the one seed in the AFC. Indy 7-6, just shut out the Texans. They'd currently be the 6th seed. However, there is a real logjam down there. 5 teams are currently sitting at 7-6 in the AFC, Rufus.
So the question is there any COVID stuff going on here?
Yeah.
That is the big variable this week, it feels like, right now, just with the I don't even know how to say it, the Omicron variant. I've only seen it written. I've never seen it pronounced.
So. We'll accept all answers here. Yeah.
First time, long time. I actually lean towards New England here. I think that, you know, especially with their defense, I make the line New England -0.89. So it's, you know, obviously the, you know, those points you're going across, the one and the zero, are not worth a ton. So it's not a very strong play. A lot for a line to move from -2 to even is not nearly the move to like move from -2 to -3, for example. But I mean, Indy's obviously been very strong running the ball, and the Patriots have been weak against the run this year. The Patriots' strength has been their pass defense and their scoring efficiency on defense. But so it's not a great matchup in that regard, but I tend to think, you know, I wouldn't write Belichick off in terms of the game planning. I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough, man. Let's do one more of these. You pick it. You want to do Green Bay, Baltimore, or Cincy, Denver?
So Green Bay, Baltimore is like not even on the board at a lot of places right now, or it wasn't. Maybe it's up now. Just because you have, I mean, I assume Lamar Jackson's out, but there hasn't really been a lot of word out of the Ravens camp. I mean, I've just looking this morning. I'm assuming he's going to be gone for a game, but it's interesting because, you know, I'm using Hundley here and Huntley, not Hundley, but, and I think, you know, it's a pretty big downgrade over Lamar Jackson. Just this is one of those games where you don't have a lot of data on him. And so it's very much about the prior and the guys without a lot of experience who've been backups just are generally not going to perform at that high level. Despite the fact that he did look pretty good in bringing Baltimore back almost to a win last week and covering +2.5 for me at the end. I had some Baltimore money line in +2.5, but without Lamar, I make the line Green Bay -4.6, which basically is in line with the market.
Okay. Fair enough. Rufus, taking into account the full slate this week, not just the games that we've covered that we've touched on, is there any bet, side, total, whatever that you feel especially good about heading into week 15?
I think the bet I probably like the most is actually Detroit +13.5 at home against Arizona.
The Lions.
It's,
how come?
My number is 9.6. So it's just, I just think, you know, I can't give you any real reason other than I think that the number just, you know, according to my numbers, it's a little too high.
Your statistical model says bet on the Lions. You're betting on the Lions.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take it. Moving on. Typically we do this.
You hold your nose and you make the bet, right?
No, hey, fair enough, man. I got nothing wrong with that. Typically at this point, we would do this segment called Long Shot or Lock, or we're skipping it this week. Rufus, I'm skipping it, man. I have a bunch of questions for you in our last segment, and I don't want to cut them short. For the listeners, though, it was going to be another Wong teaser. We've been hot with these lately, two in a row. It was going to be the Steelers +8 at home against the Titans, the Niners -2.5 at home against the Falcons. We'll see if it hits. I did already bet it. On to quick hitters. Unless you have something you want to add on that one, Rufus. Staying away?
All good.
All right, very good. On to quick hitters.
The only time you should be teasing is across the 3 and the 7, really. So,
and we are with both those.
Exactly.
That's -120 at DraftKings. I'm guessing you wouldn't do this at -120. It would have to be what, -110 for you, or am I wrong?
Yeah, -110 for me. I mean, if you have a lead on the game too, though, like the point here is that, you know, if you like those particular sides, then still teasing the two together at -120 is going to be better than just playing, you know, the sides individually.
Okay. All right. Very good. Rufus, take as long as you want with these. I just don't want to take up too much of your time. Unabated.com. We had your guy Captain Jack on for the very first episode of this podcast. He told us about Unabated. However, at the time, you guys hadn't launched yet. So for people who may not have listened or who may not remember, what is Unabated.com and how are things going so far?
Well, Captain Jack is much better with the elevator pitch than I am. I've been told many times that, you know, I got to keep it more concise, but it is a betting tools and education site. We are trying to help sort of these, I guess what Captain Jack has dubbed the aspirational sharp bettor, someone who wants to actually improve their betting and you know, lose less and sort of transition towards, you know, winning to do that. And we're not doing it by, you know, we're not giving out picks or anything like that, but we're giving you tools that you can use to quantify your own opinion. And then trading tools to help you better execute your opinion and to essentially get the best price and find the market that, you know, where the house will have the least edge. For example, being able to, you know, knowing the value of half points, knowing, you just mentioned that teaser, like we have a trading tool, we have a something called trading tools where you could put in, you know, +8.5 and true price, you know, even money, what's the price for +2.5 and see what the value that of teasing those 6 points, you know, is. And so basically, and we also have an NFL simulator that allows you to simulate the rest of the regular season and the playoffs with either your own power ratings, or you can use one of the many publicly available systems we have available. Completely customizable. You can, you know, set quarterback injury probabilities, dynamic uncertainty for a team, home field advantage, and integrates with an odds screen showing basically what edges your simulations you ran show and where good bets are. And so we are continuing to build new things. We launched, I think a few weeks ago, a prop tool that allows you to put in your own prop projections and it'll sim out what that distribution looks like. You know, you can say, you know, I have Tyreek Hill for 6 catches and, you know, 87 yards. What's the probability that he gets under 100 yards? So there's a lot of stuff there, a lot of good articles in the education section too by Captain Jack and others. And, you know, we're continuing to grow and a lot of exciting products on the horizon. But I think that the ethos is largely to allow people to quantify their own opinions.
I think it's really cool. And this podcast caters to very casual gamblers, oftentimes new gamblers. I think Unabated is a really, really good website if you want to try to take your gambling game to that next level, because you guys have already done a lot of the legwork for guys like myself. And you have these really useful tools that are ready to go, and you're giving it to people for free, which is a really important thing to mention. You're not charging anything here.
Right. We will at some point down the road, because, you know, we're not a charity, but I think for new bettors, I mean, like, line shopping is so important, and being able to get the best price and being able to understand what the best price is. So, you know, should you bet last week, I had to decide, do I want to bet the Ravens +3 -115 or a money line of +133? Those were two prices available. That was the best point spread price available in Las Vegas. +133 is the best money line. And the +3 -115 was the equivalent of +226. But I put it in the unabated compare lines tool, and it told me bet the +133. So there's simple things like that that can really help lower the house edge, and you know, every percent matters. It really does.
In a way, Rufus, you are a hardcore number guy. You make a living because you're really good at working with facts and figures, but you also seem really like kind of spiritual to me in a lot of ways. I've heard you talk about meditation and Buddhism, and recently I've heard you talk about being vulnerable. Do those sides of you...
I've been vulnerable for a long time, but just not as publicly vulnerable.
Good. Publicly vulnerable. You're right. Do those two sides of you, do they balance each other out? Are they in conflict? What do you think?
Not at all. I mean, I'm on a journey just like everybody else is. I mean, betting is part of my life, but it's not my entire life, even though I thought it was my entire life for a long time. And I thought my identity was as a successful sports bettor. But to me, like, you know, I'm trying to live the life that, you know, makes me the happiest. And I guess Buddhism would say everybody has two desires, to be happy and to be free from suffering. And I think that's pretty true, you know, and like happiness, not as like, oh, in the moment, like, you know, but sort of like peaceful and fulfilled. And so that's, I mean, I don't think I'm the only one, like, you know, that is, we age is sort of trying to figure out like, well, okay, now what? What's the, you know, I don't want to look back in 20 or 30 years and be like, what did I do all this work for? Like, why didn't I enjoy myself more? And I will say, like, I love my life. I'm really, really lucky and grateful for all the experiences I've had. But I do think Buddhism really, it is so natural to me, given my experience gambling. It is all about understanding what you can and can't control, and internals versus externals. You can't control the externals. You can't control the fact that, you know, the guy missed a 3-foot putt to cost him the golf tournament and cost me a lot of money, or that John Rahm gets COVID and he has a 6-stroke lead and has to withdraw from the Memorial, and I had a lot of bets on him to win the Memorial, right? Like,
right,
that's
right.
Stuff I can't control. But and so not stressing over the stuff you can't you know that you can't control is huge, because I mean, when you're, you know, you can still watch games and be excited by it, but at the same time, if you have anxiety over that, it's, you're just essentially putting yourself in a position where you're not going to control your own happiness. And so, and I think it extends to life. I mean, it's not just a betting thing, but it resonated to me because I knew how much sense it made in through my experience betting. Because anybody that bets for long enough knows that you have to be able to sort of separate your process from the outcome. You know, you can control your process, you can't control the outcome.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess applying that to the rest of my life has made a lot of sense.
Buddhism, you kind of ended up getting into Buddhism by chance, right?
Yeah, it was in Washington, D.C., where I was living in, it was late 2015. I discovered this Buddhist center in Adams Morgan. Now it's not there anymore. Now they built a new center in Southwest. But yeah, like it was kind of just a chance thing. It, like, my life has been a lot of chance things. It's taken so many, it's been like a 16 leg parlay for me to just random things. Like you said, like reading the Gene Wojcicki article. I mean, all these different things, you know, because I guess people, it's not like being a doctor or a lawyer where there's a lot of different ways I could have ended up there. Like my path, there had to be a lot of random things happening for me to end up where I am.
Do you have any idea where you're going from here?
No, and that's the beauty of it. Like, I literally love I love uncertainty. Like, randomness is my religion. I love not knowing, like, I don't know where I'm going to be in 5 or 10 years. And I think that's what makes that's what's exciting.
In life, not your gambling life, just in life, what are you most passionate about right now?
I would say, like, the spiritual introspection stuff. that, because that's been, you know, I've been in a bit of a like life transition period, if you will. And it's, you know, I feel like I've grown a lot in the last like 6 months, and I don't know, to me, like I'm most passionate about it because it's what really matters, I guess, like the happiness and, you know, making money doesn't matter. I mean, it matters insofar as, you know, it puts clothes on my back and whatnot, but not in terms of, you know, beyond, I mean, there was a academic paper or papers that showed that, you know, after what, 70,000 a year, whatever it is, like your minimum, you know, basically after you are able to provide for yourself and your family, there's no real correlation between income and happiness. So I think it's true.
Okay. All right.
I guess right now I'm passionate about asking the questions about life that I ask about data for betting, in a way. I guess I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's where my head has been lately. And, you know, it's probably not, you know, it's going to be jumping to something else at some point, I'm sure. But
by the way, am I going too long with this? We can edit this out.
Oh, this is fine.
You sure? You got a few extra minutes here?
Yeah. The only thing I'm going to be late for is lunch, which is not actually planned. So.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. And I think this is a really interesting conversation. I don't know. I'm so fascinated by you, Rufus, to be honest with you, because like the number stuff, the modeling, even the successes that you've had, well, I think it's fair to say that you have had more success than a lot of successful professional gamblers. That stuff seems very similar to other people that I've interviewed. However, the spirituality, the public vulnerability, that is unusual, especially with people in this realm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. So my you know, you alluded to the Risk of Ruin podcast, and I think my former business partner Zach White mentioned there that I cared more about recognition than the rest of the group did. By far, they just cared about making money. I wanted to be like it was more important to me that it was my work that made the money. Like money that was made randomly or something to me wasn't the same. I wanted to be really good at this, and I wanted to get respect and sort of recognition at some point. And I guess as I've become, like, over the last what, 5 or 6 years or whatever, I've become a little more well-known publicly with the podcast and the ESPN stuff and all that. And I kind of got a lot of that external validation that I had been seeking. And honestly, without that, I don't think I'd be where I am now. And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean, it made me very unhappy. I thought this would be like getting recognition would make me happy, and it made me actually less happy for sure.
How so?
Well, because it's like a drug. I mean, first off, you know, I got a lot of positive and negative feedback. I mean, there are people telling me that I'm too tough on touts, and there's people telling me I'm not tough enough on touts, and you can't win. I mean, if every time somebody says something nice about you, you know, you get a little, I don't know, shot of cortisol, whatever. What is it? Shot of
endorphins?
Endorphins. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a cortisone shot, but... but you know, if every time you take that praise to heart, you know, the downside is that when you get criticized, it also will bring you down a little bit. And so it's made me realize that that I'm the only person I have to prove anything to is myself. And I don't think I would have gotten there as quickly if I hadn't had this experience, you know, if I'd just been continuing to sort of fly under the radar, especially if I'd been, I mean, I wired to sort of think I needed this validation. And so it's gotten me to this point though, where I feel like I'm the only person that I have to prove anything to is myself. And, you know, right now, I don't really feel like I have to prove anything to myself. I'm in a good place in that regard. And, you know, I think I'm generally a more public person than most people. And so I think that's probably why I've opened up about this stuff, because I'm just pretty open about everything. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Do you ever see a future where you're out of the gambling world entirely?
That's a good question. Probably not, just because it's, I don't know. I mean, it's just part of me now. I mean, what else am I qualified to do? You know?
Yeah.
But I think in my future, I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I can pick and choose what I want to do, I think. And so it's going to need to be, what I want to do is do something that I find meaningful in some way. And I know you can argue, well, is gambling meaningful? No, but as long as I'm going to continue doing this, as long as I enjoy doing it. But if it becomes a burden, then I'm going to stop. I mean, I stopped betting baseball for the reason that it was just a grind and I stopped enjoying it. And so I was like, why continue?
Well, and I think I've heard you say before that you took those losses, the baseball losses, personally, whereas you did not feel that way with other sports.
Right. No, you're right. I did. I think because it's the first sport I ever modeled. It's, I don't know why. To me, it felt like it somehow was more personal to me. But also baseball, it's just, it's such a grind. Like, there is no let up at all. Every single day for 6 months, you know, you can't escape. Like with football, you know, basically the weekends mostly, right? And so you're not getting, you know, you're focusing on the process during the week and you're seeing the results on the weekend. But with baseball, it's like literally you're getting results every day. You are, and so you really have to be mentally tough to handle the ups and downs of a baseball season.
Recently, we heard DraftKings CEO Jason Robbins make headlines for saying, in part, that he's not looking for customers who are gambling for profit. There's more to it than that. That's an oversimplification. But here's my question. It kind of ties into what we're talking about. Are you still interested in taking a shot at sharp bookmaking? I think I've heard you talk about this before, too, and taking money from pro gamblers.
I mean, you know, I'm interested in seeding exchanges when they come online. I'm excited about Sport Trade coming online early next year. But I think there's a lot of really good sharp bookmakers out there that could run circles around me in that regard. That I think bookmaking and betting are different skills, for sure. I think that they're related. I mean, Matt Metcalf is a fantastic bookmaker at Circa, and he was a bettor. And so I do think that everybody that's a bookmaker should come from the betting world in some way, shape or form. Cause if you don't understand what better, if you're not a bettor yourself, then how do you understand what bettors want?
Right.
But in terms of me actually being a bookmaker, I don't know. I haven't thought that hard about it. There would have to be the right opportunity that would present itself. I mean, to be honest, I am a bit burned out from betting for, you know, doing the same thing for so long. And that's one reason that I wanted to do something like Unabated. But I'm always, yeah, right now I'm a little bit, I mean, becoming a bookmaker would require a shift and it would require stopping betting and all that. But, you know, I'll never say never.
Real quick, and then we'll wrap it up with just a couple quick questions. But you mentioned Sport Trade. This is basically where you can more or less buy and sell bets that you have made, basically. Is that fair?
No, I think you're thinking of like Prop Swap or something like that. This is, Sport Trade is going to be it's going to be an exchange that you can buy or sell shares in teams winning a game.
Right. Okay. This is what I was thinking of. I'm just doing a really, really poor job explaining it.
But it is going to be more like predicted in terms of the pricing is going to be in terms of percentages or cents. So
right.
You can buy a team at 59 cents and, you know, they score a touchdown and then maybe sell them at 67 cents. So it's going to allow for live betting with a lot of uptime during the games, pregame betting as well. And it's, I guess more like Robin Hoodization of sports betting in a way. It's geared largely towards traders, people that enjoy trading, not necessarily your normal sports bettors. You don't need to learn that new language of, you know, the language of money, American odds, which, to be honest, American odds don't make much sense. Like I think in American odds because I've been in this world so long, but it's intimidating. Like when I first moved out to Vegas and worked at LVSC, I thought in probabilities, I thought in percentages, like, oh, 60%, like minus one, that's minus 150. But so I do think if they can draw more people in that are not, I guess, that do not have that sort of understanding of betting terminology, I think that's a win. But I'm also my personal excitement is more for a market that isn't going to limit sharp bettors and its success is like sports trade and the success of any exchange is largely going to depend on the liquidity they get. So I'm hopeful.
Let's wrap it up with a couple quickies here. Your best advice for casual gamblers is what?
Line shop. Always take the best price available.
And use the unabated tools to figure out which one's actually better if it's confusing, because they get confusing
But have multiple outs. Like the more different accounts you have to bet in, the better a price you can get. Don't ever take +3.5 if +4 is available.
Good advice. Last one, and I should have prepped you for this. I meant to, but I forgot. I think you're going to be able to handle it anyway. Do you have any book recommendations for casual gamblers?
Ooh, I was going to say I have book recommendations, but all the books I've been reading recently are not betting related.
Well, go for that too, then. That's fine. Give me whatever you want to give me. I asked this randomly a few weeks ago, and people seem to really like it.
Okay, so the books, I just finished reading a book called The Four Agreements last night. Highly recommend it. It's more life type things. I got to remember what they are. Be impeccable with your word. Don't take anything personally. Don't make assumptions and something else. But I read The Alchemist last week, which it's a novel, but it's like, man, so profound and full of life lessons. In terms of betting stuff, you know, The Logic of Sports Betting 100% is the book you should read if you are trying to like become a better bettor and understand the ecosystem well. But I think if you're a handicapper and books that aren't necessarily about gambling, but are about sort of a viewpoint of the world and a way of thinking about things are what I find most useful. So like any Taleb is good to read, and his arch rival, Nate Silver, the Signal and the Noise. That's actually a good book to read too. I'm not taking sides there.
Okay. All right. Delicately put. Good stuff, man. Anything else I'm missing? Anything else you want to add?
That's it, I think.
Rufus Peabody, co-host of the awesome Bet the Process podcast, one of the guys behind unabated.com, which I highly, highly recommend listeners check out. Rufus, you crushed it. I'm really grateful for your time and thanks so much for coming on.
You know, I rambled and I gambled. And so, you know, I think thanks for having me, Josh.
You nailed it, man. Thanks again. All right, stats we didn't get to. Tampa now has back-to-back 10-win seasons for the first time since 99-2000. That was under Tony Dungy. Stanford Steve from ESPN with this one. Tampa, Dallas, Cleveland, and San Fran combined to score 9 points total in the third and fourth quarters of their games last week, and they all won. Not easy to pull off. One more, really random. I ordered the UFC fight last weekend and jotted a note on this. Amanda Nunes' loss to Juliana Pena was the fourth biggest upset in UFC title fight history. Pena was +650. The number one biggest upset, much you probably remember this one, Holly Holm, +870 over Ronda Rousey. Going to switch things up a little bit next week. Remember, not too long ago, I asked if people wanted more NBA. Sounds like we do. So next week, we're going to preview the Christmas Day games Always a ton of fun. So expect mostly NBA next week, although I'll figure out a way to get some football in there too. And this is just going to be a 1 week thing. Then we're back to more football for the rest of the season. What you wonderful listeners have come to expect. Otherwise, you know the deal. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. Email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. See you next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.